Terry Savage joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch, the syndicated financial columnist. You can find her at terrysavage.com. Hi, Terry.
Talk about going poof, stock market.
No kidding. No kidding. You actually posted about people's 401ks. What are you saying?
Yes, earlier this week, you can see this happening, and it's always nice to have a rebound like we're having today. But I think the trend has changed. A lot has. One has to acknowledge that some very basic things have changed, things that have gone on for most of the last 40 years. For 40 years, the Fed kept inflation under control, since 1980, 81. Now, inflation is not under control. For the last at least the last 13 years, the Fed has focused primarily on keeping the economy going and getting it growing. Now the economy is growing, but we have inflation. And the Fed is acting. They're in a quiet period this week. We'll have news headlines next week. They're going to raise rates. We don't know how much, 50 basis points. Do they want to shock the system and scare the heck out of everybody and raise it 75 basis points? Probably not. But in addition to that, they're going to suck the money out of the economy, the money that they've been putting in. Now, we think of the money going out there because everybody got a stimulus check and other checks and unemployment, additional benefits, and so forth. But the way that was financed, the government sold treasury bills, notes, and bonds, IOUs from the government. You can buy them at treasurydirect.gov. We quote the yields, the 2-year, the 10-year. That's how the government raises money to send it out. Who buys that? Well, big institutions and foreign central banks, and maybe you through Treasury Direct. But a lot of those treasury securities have been bought by the Fed for their own account. And they also went out in the open market and bought mortgage-backed securities to keep the housing market strong a little bit further back. And they have like $9 trillion in their portfolio. Now, how did they pay for them? They just said, here's a credit in your account, banks, institutions. It's newly created money. That went on for the last 3 years for sure, but for over a decade more, going back to 2007, as they tried to get the economy growing. Now, they have reversed their policy. It's like draining the bathtub. They are selling into the open market, and they're always global buyers of U.S. Treasury IOUs, the safest thing in the world. They're selling their portfolio, and when the banks or it goes through the financial system, pays the Fed, thank you, Fed, for selling us these 10-year treasury notes that have been out there trading in the market. Buyers pay for them, and the Fed just says, whoosh, down the drain. That money is no longer in the system, and that sucks money out. And that's what they're about to start to do, and that changes everything.
So is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Oh, John, leave it to you to always ask the right on point question. So in a way, it's a good thing because it means that everybody who's counting on lots of money being floating around, and that will push prices up, and that then what they can afford higher wages and all that stuff, it will break the back of inflation done correctly. Done incorrectly, and this is not a precise science, it could slow the economy down, and it would potentially cause a recession. That's not necessarily so. People hope for a soft landing, but this is science, and it's art, and it's luck. And this Fed hasn't demonstrated to everyone that they know exactly what they're doing, because a year ago today, they were still talking transitory inflation.
Yeah. I think it was less than a year ago.
Yeah.
But I think for the folks whose retirements are tied up in equities, they want the market to stay strong. I mean, I think inflation is something that I pay for every day, but my retirement is something I've been paying for 40 years, and I have to have that. It's, you know, more difficult to manage around that if that goes away, if it doesn't come back in a meaningful time. So talk to me about people's retirement portfolios, and what does this all mean about that? Terry Savage, the syndicated financial columnist, joins us on Wednesdays. Terry, I thought you did a real nice job of explaining to us what's happened to the economy and the Fed's role in it. What does this mean, though, for people who are counting on their retirement portfolios to be there?
Okay, divide yourselves down the middle. A bear market is painful no matter what your age. You get a monthly statement. Right now, most people just go online to your 401k account, too frequently, I guess, and say, What happened? What's my bottom line? How much did I lose? How much did I make? If you're younger, you want to keep in mind, I must say this every single show, there's never been a 20-year period going back to 1926. No 20-year period where you lost money in a diversified portfolio of large company stocks, including dividends. I call it the S&P 500 index fund that you're probably in your 401k, and that's even adjusted for inflation. You're going to retire in American dollars. You're going to live here. Do not worry about the ups and downs. Just let it come out of your paycheck and keep going in. Don't have a panic. When you get close to retirement, you're looking at financial planning called how do I make my money last as long as I do? And if you start with, oh my goodness, look at my 401k. I didn't even notice it coming out. And now I've got $100,029 in my plan. And then one day you see the market's down and you look and it's, oh, less $20,000 less or $42,000 less after a month. That's when people panic. I'm trying to save you from panic. I'm trying to save you from stress. And I'm trying to save you from making an emotional decision that will hurt you probably more than help you, which is selling in the midst of the headlines. The market's down, it lost $10 trillion kind of headlines. So you have to plan and look and see what's inside your plan and where can you hide. That's the trick.
Where do you hide?
Well, unfortunately, $2 trillion of the money in 401k plans, or $7 trillion in 401k plans, about $2 trillion is in something called target date funds. They tell you, pick the year you're going to retire. We'll do the investing and we'll get more conservative when you get closer to retirement. So the fact is, the more conservative traditionally thing is to, we'll put more in bonds. But this year, with interest rates going up, because the Fed has changed course here, interest rates go up, bond prices fall. So if you're 60% in stocks, 40% in bonds, you are in the two worst categories. Stocks are down, and amazingly, bonds are down even more. And the most conservative 2020 or 2025 portfolios are actually losing more than the ones for 2060, which are mostly in stocks and don't have bonds.
So where do I go? Like, would you suggest people manipulate their formula, choose a different plan, pull money out and put it someplace
that isn't
stocks?
No, you can't do that.
Well, you just said you're a double loser if you're in stocks and bonds.
Exactly. So there's a trick. Look, you cannot take money out of your 401k plan until you retire. John, you've heard me many times say, do a rollover to Fidelity or Vanguard, find some more conservative funds, because most 401k plans are designed for young people to grow their money. That's correct. And they don't have places to hide. You may have a money market fund account inside your plan. You may have something called a stable value fund, which is currently paying about 3%. Yeah, none of that's anywhere near inflation now, but that's a place to move some money. And a third alternative, many 401k plans now have something called the brokerage alternative. And you know the wild people, the younger people in your plan that want to trade stocks and want to trade, you know, the hot stuff, they don't settle for the funds or the target date funds. They put money in the brokerage option so they can trade individual stocks. But you can use that too if you're conservative. And if you move a portion maybe out of your target date fund and move it into the brokerage portion of your 401k, not taking it out, the brokerage portion will let you put it in a money market fund and have some safety. It won't protect you from inflation because rates are so low, although they're climbing, but at least you won't have that horrible feeling of seeing the shrinking bottom line.
And would that enable you to pick a stock or a what do they call them, the ETFs?
You can, in the brokerage portion of a 401k, which is something relatively new in the last 15, 20 years maybe, it was just to give investors in the 401k plan a better choice than the six or eight mutual funds.
Yeah.
So most conservative people haven't even done that. They're, oh, that's fine. I'll just be in the S&P fund and I'll be in the international fund and so forth. But if you don't have a good money market fund choice, or you don't have one at all, or a stable value fund, if you move some into the brokerage, you don't have to buy stocks there. You can put it in a money market fund through that brokerage option inside your plan.
But
think about that.
But would this be a would this be a hedge? Say, okay, I'm going to take some of that money out, and I'm going to put it in health stocks. I'm going to actually target an area that I think is going to kind of bridge me between this dip and the market's recovering.
That is a different kind of investing, and sure you can. That's why they put a brokerage account in there. So you could pick ETFs, or what, but the hedge against that diversified stock and bond portfolio, sadly, is cash. And cash, like any hedge, is green, but it's not green enough. It's only paying you about 1%, although it's creeping up, and inflation is 8%. So, but at least the dollar amount still looks like it's there, and you'll feel better, and it'll let you hang on to your stock portion and your bond portion, if you have good bonds, until we get through this frightening stage of the economy and the markets.
It's really interesting. By the way, I just want to mention this. We post as a podcast our conversations, our interviews with Terry and the other shows. So if everything you've heard in the last 26 minutes sounds good, but you need to hear it again or you want to share it with somebody, after the show, Pete will produce it and post it as a podcast at WGNradio.com. Click on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Terry, I'm going to pause and then let's take some calls from our listeners. You may have something to say about student debt as well. We'll get to all of that after the news, okay? Terry Savage, you're ready to roll. Before we take him, Terry, anything else you want to squeeze in here?
Well, you're going to hear about this, so don't jump up and down yet. There's some talk out of Washington as sort of an acknowledgement of something we said here a couple of weeks ago about student loans. When they postponed or extended, I should say, the forbearance till August 31st, I said the odds of them suddenly telling you on September 1st, got to start paying again, got to start accruing interest again 2 months before an election, I said that was very, very long odds. And now there's sort of some talk out of Washington that there will be some sort of announcement about something related to student loans before that moment of truth at the end of August. So we knew something would happen. The question is whether the president has the legal authority. He's, for the last year and a half, said, no, I don't think I do. I'm asking my lawyers about that. They've nibbled around the edges with some programs for people who didn't get taken care of in the public service loan program and so forth. But I'm sure we're going to have a headline day talking about what proposal they come up with, especially because for every person who still has a student loan, 1.7 trillion of them, 43 million people, there's probably at least almost that many who paid off their student loans.
Yeah, think about that. And I think that's what's happening. That's why the Congress probably won't pass this. This is what I'm reading today. So it would require executive action by the president. And fearing that, some Republicans today are talking about passing a separate law. Good luck passing it, but they would propose a separate law that would keep the president from, via executive action, forgiving up to $10,000 in student debt. There was a Hispanic congressional caucus that met with the president Tuesday, or rather Monday, and Tuesday they said that the president is inclined to give $10,000 in student loan forgiveness. Still don't know exactly what that would look like, but it's in play still, Terry. I'm surprised.
Well, oh no, don't be surprised. This is the biggest. You talk about, well, I shouldn't say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. You talk about the mayor giving out gas cards or money and people signing up, over 9,000 people. People know when someone's handing them something for free, and it wasn't the mayor that gave out the gas cards, but this latest money giveaway. And that is exactly why there was some concern over the gas card giveaway, if the person giving it away is going to be a candidate. But here you have a candidate, presumably a candidate, the president for re-election, or at least the midterm election for all his party members, in the position of giving away $10,000 in student loan forgiveness to millions of people. Well, that's, you know, this is apolitical on my part, but pretty obvious that this is one of the most obvious vote buying schemes you've ever seen.
Right. But I think, to your point a moment ago, that plenty of people have already paid off their loans. I'm not sure this is a slam dunk, even if the president can do it. I'm not sure he has as many buyers as he thinks. I think a lot of people say that they resent it. That'll work against him.
They're absolutely, and that's the political calculus of the Republicans saying we're going to make it impossible for him to do that, of the president hinting that he might do that, of the question of the legality of it being done by executive
they
order.
Should
the
let him. They should let him do it and suffer the consequences, politically speaking.
You know, this is, it's so cynical now. That's why politics is so cynical, because we're out and out buying votes and nobody's saying, wait a minute, let's come up with a better solution. Let's re restate the interest on all those loans. And if you paid so much in interest over the amount of your principal, then it's forgiven. You've been paying for a long time. Not you got a, took out a loan 4 years ago and now we're going to give you $10,000 back. But look, you've been paying for 26 years and people have, or 19 years. You borrowed $12,000. You've paid back $15,000 plus interest. You're free. So don't get me going on that. I try and
Here
stay
are
perfectly
questions
financial.
From our listener. 773 okay. said, I have Amazon stock and I keep hearing it will split. Is that a good thing?
It should be a neutral thing, but there's a popular perception and some history worth it. By making a higher price stock trade lower, you get five times the shares and at one-fifth the price, that it makes it more accessible to ordinary people to buy. So that is sometimes considered bullish. But if you love Amazon, I love Amazon, then just hang on to it, whether they split or not.
What about IB savings bonds? Terry, we answer this every week. I understand after May 1st, interest will be 9.6%. Is this a good
investment?
No, nobody
knows yet. Nobody knows. I talked to the Treasury about this a few days ago. I said, wait, you told me that I couldn't, you know, I wrote a column, which will go run this weekend, about selling your savings bonds when they mature. And I thought I'd lead with, here's going to be the right new rate on May 1st. They said, Terry, we're not even giving it out till May 2nd. So they said, I called and said, wait, how do people think it's over 9%? The Wall Street Journal had an article that figured out what they thought was the computation used by Treasury to put the rate at, and it very well could, it might likely be over 9%, but we don't know for sure. It doesn't matter whether you buy them now or later, unless on May 1st, they might also make an adjustment to the current zero base rate that is always paid plus the inflation adjustment, in which case you'd want to wait and buy them May 1st or 2nd or 3rd after the new rate comes out, it just in case they increase the base rate. So you buy them again. There's an article on the homepage at terrysavage.com, some little boxes that say identity theft, what to do, and so forth. And there's one that says I-bonds. It's the instructions for opening an account at Treasury Direct, which is really easy to do online, treasurydirect.gov, setting yourself up. They come right into your checking or savings account. You can only buy $10,000. And you might want to wait for just that reason I mentioned till next week, later in the week.
This is Yvonne for Terry Savage. You're on WGN, Yvonne.
Hi, John. My question for Terry is, when you're talking about sort of counteracting the market or hedging, is how do you feel about real estate?
You know, someone brought that up to me. Because I was writing about 401k plans, and the only way to really invest in real estate, and I have some real estate, there are mutual funds that invest in real estate investment trusts, and in a retirement plan, even with a brokerage option, you want to think about where you, I don't want to invest in apartment REITs. I'm not sure they can raise their prices, their rents fast enough to keep up with inflation. I sure don't want to invest in retail REITs because I don't know what's happening with the retail sector of the economy with consumers getting squeezed. But warehouses, industrial, those REITs have gone up. So inside your retirement plan, if you have a brokerage option, you could consider a real estate investment trust. Now, outside it, it's a whole other asset class, and it depends on how you invest. I personally, you know, there's a famed tycoon, Sam Zell, the great real estate investor of all time. And I said to him, Sam, I just always worry that if I bought a few apartments and rented them out, this is many, many years ago, 30 years ago, that they'd call me in the middle of the night and say, my toilet stopped up. You know, I've been a good home buyer real estate investor, but never thought about income properties for that very reason. But people have made a fortune and assured themselves of a retirement income investing in individual real estate properties.
We'll go from Yvonne to Stephen. Good luck, Yvonne. Stephen, you're on WGN. What can we do for you?
Hi, John. Hi, Terry. I'm your biggest Bolingbrook fan. Been waiting for a while to talk to you.
Great.
Hey, since the market's so down, I just retired, and unfortunately my wife and I have had no income for 2 years because my mom was in hospice and we were taking care of her. But the bottom line is we've got some excess cash, and with the market as down as it is, am I thinking poorly as a contrarian to think that this is a good time to put more money in, knowing that the market is going to come back eventually?
It depends on whether what kind of attitude you'll have if you put some in now and then the market goes down further. So the way I've solved that emotionally You know, I agree with you. Over the long run, the market will be higher. I have zero idea. And a lot of people go broke trying to guess where the bottoms and the tops are. Sure. I have remedied that for myself and in every bit of advice I give. Put it all in a money market fund. And let's say it's you had $100,000. Just take $7,500 on the fourth day of every month and have them automatically transfer it to a specific fund. Equity income fund if you're kind of conservative, or the S&P 500 fund, or even a small cap fund if you want to be more aggressive, and just say, or you can do all three funds and say, on the third of every month, transfer $2,500 into the growth fund, $2,500 into the equity income, $2,500 in the small cap. And at the end of the year, you'll have a hunk of money in there. You'll never have bought the low, I hope. I mean, and you won't have bought the highs. That's
Terry,
because it's a mental thing.
You bet. That's our pleasure. And but the short answer is yes, this is not a bad time to buy. Just don't put everything in at once.
We'll only know in hindsight, John, if this was a good or bad time to buy. No one knows. Cramer doesn't know. All the people on the floor don't know. And you don't know, and I don't know. In hindsight, we can look back. It always happens. I mean, I thought the market was going through the floor in April of 2020. It turned out to have been a spectacular time to buy. That's why if you're in a 401k plan, you don't have to make those decisions. You just go, oops, they took it out again a month. Was that dumb? I don't know. Well, it keeps going out automatically.
TerrySavage.com is the website, and the articles she referenced are there. Remember, we'll post this entire conversation since noon today at WGNRadio.com under the Wintrust Business Lunch. You can listen to it as a podcast and share it with your friends. Nice to talk to you this week, Terry.
Thanks, John.
She's a font of information. It's 12:46 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Speaking of information, here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A Starbucks in Northwest Suburban Cary is one of the first Illinois stores to unionize. The workers voted 17-4 to join Workers United. Workers at a Peoria Starbucks voted 9-2 to join the union as well. Workers United is the service employees union affiliate organizing workers at the coffee chain. The union says out of 35 stores that have had elections, 32 have voted to unionize. Employees at more than 200 Starbucks locations have filed for union elections in 31 states. Locations in LaGrange, on Armitage, and in Edgewater, Chicago, have an election date set for May 6th. Stores in Hyde Park, Logan Square, and The Loop have an election set for June 7th. The co-owner of Chicago Reader says he'll step aside so the publication can move forward with its transition to a nonprofit. The controversy and holdup came after Len Goodman wrote a column about his concerns over vaccinating his child against COVID. It led to a battle over editorial control of the Reader. The delay transitioning to a nonprofit also led to funding concerns for the 50-year-old publication. Goodman says he'll now sign off on the sale so that the Reader can transition immediately to nonprofit status. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Back to the business of food, and back to Steve Alexander.
Mm-hmm. Lunchtime. I'm hungry. How about you?
I am.
Yeah, let's talk about a new place in Chicago to satisfy that hunger. And here is a food-related sound that you're probably familiar with. That's the sound of a latte being made. And the newest place in Chicago for coffee and breakfast opened yesterday on the northwest side near Ravenswood and Peterson.
It was very exciting. It was a gangbusters day.
That's the boss.
Beth Wojtek. I'm the bakery manager at Hearts and Flower Bakery and Cafe.
It is operated by Misericordia, which has had a bakery and cafe on its campus at Ridge Road and Devon for 30 years. But the new bakery and cafe is off campus, perhaps exposing a whole new group of customers to the Misericordia goodies, residents, and mission.
I think so. I think we'll get a lot of folks that may have never been to Misericordia itself.
It's a beautiful cafe. Is there one thing that jumps out from yesterday?
Just the smiles on all of the customers' faces and all of the comments of people saying how happy they were that we were finally open, and they seem to really enjoy the atmosphere and interacting with the Misericordia residents.
She says about 10 outside staff and 10 residents are at work each day, taking and filling orders both drive-through and walk-in.
Correct. We have seating inside for about 30 people. when the weather is nice, we have some cafe tables set up outside as well.
It's the Hearts and Flower Bakery and Cafe, and here's the where and when.
We're located at 6130 North Ravenswood Avenue.
6 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. By the way, it's Misericordia's Candy Days, being held virtually again because of COVID. And Lou Manfredini has a candy jar you can toss some money into. Just go to WGNradio.com and search for Lou's Candy Jar. From the farm to your belly, today's National Prime Rib Day. It's also National Gummy Bear Day. And boy, gummies have taken on a new meaning over the last few years. You know, Haribo invented them 100 years ago in Germany, and they're building a new factory near Kenosha. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Andy Harris joins us now, the CEO of the sales tech company Challenger. Andy, you're on WGN. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Good. Talk to me about Challenger. What do you all do?
Yes, we are a sales enablement and technology training company. So we help people and mostly salespeople, win sales and win the moments that matter.
Is Chicago a popular spot for that kind of a company?
Yeah, absolutely. I've actually been in the Chicago tech scene for over 25 years. And so I think Chicago's a great place to grow a business. We have great networks here, really good funding options for tech companies here. So it's a fantastic place to grow a business.
So I know what sales is. I know what tech is. What's sales technology per se?
Yeah, well, if you think about, with the transition from COVID, a lot of people are working remotely and really, we think about training in a different way. So we have an e-learning platform that allows people to go through the stages of becoming what we call a challenger sale, which is someone that we have five types of salespeople, and challenger sales are people that are not necessarily a relationship salesperson or what we call a lone wolf, someone who only kind of keeps themselves and just does their own sales, but it's really someone who challenges the status quo and helps people have insights into their company. So really, it's almost like we're educating them and teaching them about their business and coming in and offering that value. Because if you think about right now, people can find so much information on the internet, you really need to add something that differentiates you in the sales process.
Yeah, I get that. So who are some of your clients or potential clients?
Yeah, I mean, we work with large pharmaceutical companies, Microsoft, Google, like I mentioned, pharmaceuticals, all the way up to, startups. So, people that are just first building their sales team for the very first time, and, they just got some funding and they're looking to expand their sales team. That's a great opportunity to bring in, a challenger methodology. So you really hit your, hit the ground running with their sales team.
Is the challenge these days educating or implementing things when people are still at home?
Yeah, I mean, it's different, right? So I think people are starting to figure it out with, 2 years into COVID. People are figuring out that the buying process has certainly changed with people being remote. And the biggest changes that we see is that prospects or sales prospects are actually 57% through the buying process before they even contact the salesperson, because there's so much, at their fingertips. So, they can Google you, they can go to your website, they can read customer reviews. And so what we're trying to do is say, hey, when they do contact you, you really need to differentiate yourself in that sales experience, because they're already, halfway through the process.
Yeah, you need to close.
yeah, exactly. And if you just start with the table stakes, like asking them, well, why are you buying, or what are the problems you're trying to solve? They've already figured all that out. And then I would say the other thing that's made it more complicated is there's more stakeholders than ever in our buying process. So in 2020, the average was about 6 stakeholders. Now in 2021 to 2022, we're seeing about 11 stakeholders. So that's like procurement, legal, maybe your CFO, and then you have to also sell to your actual client. So, there's a lot of stakeholders and everybody is another Zoom meeting. So it takes a lot longer to get across the finish line, right?
You know, who I think knew a little bit about this some time ago were car dealers, because people walk onto the lot and they already knew what they wanted and they knew what the competition was. And it was a completely different buying dynamic once the internet got going.
Yeah, exactly. Because now you can research everything and everything about the car, the features, the functionality, and you walk in and you're like, this is the car I want,
ChallengerInc.com has 25 employees in Chicago. We'll have to talk more another day, Andy. Are you guys hiring? How's business?
Yes, we are absolutely hiring. So we have we have about 300 employees. We have employees in the UK as well. We have an office in EMEA, in London. I was actually just there last week. And Chicago, we're actually headquartered in Arlington, Virginia, but we are growing our Chicago office. Like you mentioned, 25 people. We're trying to get it up to around double it, so around 50 people by the end of 2022.
The website is challengerinc.com. Challengerinc.com, CEO of the sales tech company, Andy Harris. Nice to talk to you, Andy. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks. Have a great day.
You too. Good luck.